I have heard some people make some very degrading comments about the cops recently, and I personally believe that people should refrain from making degrading comments about the cops, because the cops have a very difficult job, and they do it very well with great pride and integrity. And therefore, I wrote a song in support of the cops, and it goes like this. Come and gather round, you people, now, and listen to me yak. All you doctors and you lawyers and you folks who push the crack, and all you folks who push the buttons and you folks who push the mops. Come listen while I tell you how I really like the cops. Oh, I really like the cops. I think they're pretty cool. I like them in my neighborhood. I like them in my school. I think the cops are wonderful. I think the cops are nice. And I like to have a broken jaw and carry a pack of ice. I really like the cops. I think they're pretty neat. I like it when they take my face and smash it on the street, and then they drag me to a station and they lock me in a room, and then I like it when they rape me up the anus with the broom. I really like the cops. They make me want to sing. You know my favorite movie is that tape of Rodney King, and so I really get pissed off whenever somebody like you suggests we should subject the cops to citizens review. I really like the cops. I am so glad that they're around to hassle me and ticket me for sitting on the ground. I really love the cops. I'd be so sad if they were gone. There's something about a uniform that always turns me on. Yeah, I really like the cops so much, folks, that I don't think you should find out the number of your local cop watch group. And if there is no cop watch group in your town, that's good. I don't think you should start one. And if you're walking down the street and you see somebody getting hassled by the cops, I don't think you should stop and see what happens. I think you should just walk on by, because that person must deserve everything they get for not looking rich enough for the cops to leave them alone. And if you're with a group of people and the cops start picking on one of you, I don't think you should stick up for that person at all. I think you should just let the police physically and psychologically isolate your companion. And I don't think you should carry one of those little disposable drugstore cameras on your person at all times to document police brutality with when you see it. And I don't think your town should have a civilian review board to investigate citizen complaints against cops. And if you do have a board like that, then I think it should just be a rubber stamp committee that approves of everything the cops do. And if there's a cop in your town who makes a regular habit of beating up unarmed people, or raping women at gunpoint, or raping men at gunpoint, or killing people for an adrenaline rush because he is a psychopath, then I think that he should not be fired. And if he is fired, then that is definitely punishment enough for him, and he should not be prosecuted. And I most definitely do not think that you should put his name and his address and his telephone number and his list of crimes on a flyer and post that flyer all over town. And I don't think you should go to his neighborhood and talk to all his neighbors like people do when a convicted sex offender moves into a neighborhood and let them know what he has done. And I don't think that you should egg his house or slash his tires or run him out of town. And I don't think that when he applies for a job on the police force in the next town over the hill, I don't think you should go to that town too and do the same thing and make sure that he never works as a police officer again. I don't think you should do any of this, because your town has the best police department in the world. Oh yes, I really like the cops. Just to see 'em gets me high. I hope that I get taken into custody and die, and then I hope that every fact that's in the coroner's report gets chucked into a dumpster so it won't be heard in court. A-yoodle-ay, a-yoodle-oo, a-yoodle-ay, a-yoodle-oo, a-yoodle-ay, a-yoodle-oo. I love those boys in blue. And when I hear you making statements that you know are quite obscene, like how the cops are nasty and like how the cops are mean, it makes me want to tell you that you ought to get some class and help your local officers by kicking your own ass. So come gather round, you people, now, and listen to me yak. All you doctors and you lawyers and you folks who push the crack, and all you folks who push the buttons and you folks who push the mops, come listen right, I tell you how I really like the cops.
All right, that was Desert Rat with I Really Like the Cops. And if you really like the cops too, you can get involved watching them. Right here in Santa Cruz, we have our very own Santa Cruz Cop Watch, just getting started. And if you're on the internet, you can check out the webpage at santacruzcopwatch.org. All right, you're tuned to Indie Newswire on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We have on the line with us today Mitchell Crooks. Let's start off by telling our listeners where you are at on the 4th of July weekend, 2002, July 6th, 2002?
Well, I was staying in a hotel room in Inglewood, California, and I just finished up a trip around the States, and I was basically looking for a place, like a loft space downtown L.A., and I had with my video camera, and I was transferring, you know, the stuff I had shot during my trip to VHS in my hotel room, and so I had it with me, and all of a sudden I started hearing this lady, like, just scream at the top of her lungs, and, I mean, something's up, you know, something's up when you hear somebody scream like that, so I looked out the window, and I saw her, and she's like, you know, she said the key words, you know, don't resist, you know, stop hurting him, so I knew I had to involve police, because, you know, you just don't say resist unless, you know, it has something to do with the police, so I grabbed my video camera and ran out there as fast as I could and started filming the scene, and I saw, at the time, I didn't know who it was. I just knew that they'd beaten him pretty badly. He was down on the ground. There was like six officers all standing around him. And I just started videotaping it, and just to see, you know, what, you know, if it could be of some help maybe to the kid or something, you know, later on in a court or whatever. And I could tell, though, by the way that the lady was screaming that before I had gotten there, you know, they had whooped his ass pretty good. I don't know, can you say that? Say the A word anymore? I don't know.
Yeah, we're on pirate radio here in Santa Cruz.
Okay, all right. So you can say whatever.
Yep.
Oh, cool. So, anyways, I started filming. And they lifted the kid up. He was already in handcuffs. They lifted him up and slammed him on the hood of, or the trunk of the police car. Then you know I tried to focus in on the kid's reaction, and it was obvious that he was like pretty dazed and confused. Probably from the culmination of them beating him beforehand and, you know, being slammed on the police car like that. I mean, it was with absolute full force. If you know, see in slow motion, you could see the officer slam him with all his might. And basically, you know, he just socked him out of the blue. You know, I realized at that point that, you know, that the officer had broken the law. You just, once you're in handcuffs, you're not supposed to, it's against the law to, you know, commit further acts of violence towards a suspect. You, at that point, you become property of the state of California, and they have an obligation to protect you at that point, which we all know is not the case. But, you know, so I ended up filming it. It turned into this big, huge media circus. I went to the media and showed it, and, you know, people calling from all over the world wanted to show it. You know, everybody thought it was going to turn into another L.A. riot, and that, you know, people are going to burn down their businesses again, and it just, I mean, just completely evolved into this thing that was just totally blown out of proportion, and then, you know, the media started playing the race card, like, nobody was saying it was racial at all at first, like, you know, even, you know, the black community wasn't screaming racism, you know, which is what, you know, people, white people and people in authority, you know, are accustomed to hearing from black people in situations like that. They were just saying it was wrong, period, you know, regardless of the color of Donovan Jackson. And so, you know, I believe it was racism, but you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to prove stuff like that when you're dealing with cops, you know, especially when you have Mexican cops on scene and you have black cop on scene. I mean, they all, you know, they all live under the same code, so it's kind of like, you know, there's racism doesn't really play a line with them. But so, anyways, the guy went to trial, and, you know, actually, I was arrested for it, so that's, I had left that part out of it. I was getting ready to do an interview at BET, and before I could rally support from the black community, you know, behind my cause.
What's BET? Black Entertainment Television?
Yeah. Okay. It was CNN. I was supposed to go on BET with Ed Gordon, with Maxine Waters, and a couple of other black leaders, and, you know, because everybody was outraged, you know. And, you know, they just didn't want me to go on TV, you know, and talk about the issue of police brutality. I mean, you know, cops were supposed to be regarded as heroes and stuff after a couple of them died at the Trade Center. And, you know, it seems like the problem with police brutality and just police violence in general has gotten a hell of a lot worse since Bush has been in office, but also like 10 times worse since 9/11, because now they know that they don't have the answer to anybody. So basically they arrested me out in front of CNN. They had their the district attorney in L.A., Steve Cooley, brought his G-men out and swarmed up on me. I was outside having a cigarette in between takes, and
Now, what were you arrested? Why were you arrested?
Why?
Yeah.
Oh, I had a 4-year-old warrant from like early 1999, where I went partying and over the weekend in San Francisco, and I was driving back to Sacramento, and I got in a fender bender type of accident, and I'd been drinking the night before, so there was still alcohol, you know. So I never faced up to my time or went, you know, and dealt with the situation. I just kind of skipped town and moved on. And, you know, I mean, there were several times where these warrants were not that big a deal, you know, and I was let go by police after being harassed. I mean, I get harassed all the time by police just because of the way I look and the way I act, the way I talk, things I know. And,
is it
you know, this wasn't a big deal until, you know, I came forward with this videotape, and they just knew that they wanted to retaliate against me, law enforcement in general. And, because I'd made a mess for them that they had to clean up, you know, and, you know, they're trying to justify why, you know, the officer did it, and all these people coming out of nowhere, like supporting the police officers, saying that, you know, that they deal with punks like this all the time, you know. And I mean, things just really started to change. So they ended up arresting me, and they forced me to testify in front of the grand jury, and then had a private plane, this for a misdemeanor warrant to a first DUI 0.08, had a private plane fly me from Burbank Airport all the way back up to Auburn, California, just north of Sacramento, where the crime actually took place, and put me on a 6-month jail sentence for a DUI and a petty theft, which was even older than the DUI, and put me on 23-hour lockdown. I mean, some days I wouldn't even get out for that hour, and you know, I mean, I couldn't be around other inmates. They said they put me on 23-hour lockdown just because of the fact that white power inmates might want to try to hurt me because I helped out a black kid, which was kind of funny because the white power inmates that I had talked to were like, you know, we hate police first. So, you know what I mean? It was just another excuse for law enforcement to retaliate against me for coming forward, you know, and just trying to be honest, just trying to do a good thing for somebody, you know. And it, you know, I spent 6 months in jail for it. It was ridiculous. You know, I had very little contact with the outside world. I had absolutely no idea what was going on as far as the situation. You know, officers would try me every single day, you know, to try to bait me into fights and try to bait me into situations. And, you know, I mean, it was just horrible. They would intimidate people that came to visit me so that they wouldn't. I mean, it was just really horrible. I mean, it was a high price to pay for trying to do something honest for somebody you don't even know, you know?
Did you get much support from the community in Inglewood for coming out with this footage?
Not, I mean, candy-coated, you know? I mean, you know, for the press. But I wouldn't say that I've seen a whole lot. I haven't been to Inglewood much. I'm sure if I was there all the time, I probably would receive more. I mean, people are pretty, you know, appreciative of it. But as far as me seeing it, that's not really been the case, no. I got a little support from Congresswoman Maxine Waters, and she raised some money on my behalf, but, I mean, really, it really wasn't that much of support. I mean, I really felt like, you know, I you know, started to have a lot of regrets. I still have a lot of regrets about doing it, and, you know, I've paid such a high price, it just seems like, you know, something else should come out of it. There should be some more justice for me, you know, and for the kid that got beat, you know. So
how about the officers that were involved in the beating? Did we
Well, there was only one officer in particular that was caught on videotape, so he was the only one that was reprimanded.
Who's that? What's that officer's name?
Jeremy Morse.
What kind of support did he receive from his community and the English
Well,
community?
He got, you know, he law enforcement has all kinds of organizations that raise money for their defense. I basically call them Nazi organizations because that's basically what they are. They don't care what the officer's done. They're going to support them in a court of law no matter what. You know, if I had had attorneys and law and people raising money on my behalf for this DUI, I would have never seen a jail cell in the first place. You know, so law enforcement has like this cushy little, whenever they get in trouble, they have, you know, plenty of space to, you know, be comfortable in, even if they've committed a crime, you know. There's plenty of people that'll come out and support them, and just because they're police officers and just because of what they do. you know, police officers, they do. They have to deal with a lot of crap. They have to deal with a lot of crap from people. I mean, that's why I'm not a police officer, because I couldn't deal with that. I'd be beating people up left and right. I just know it. And, you know, I mean, that's still no excuse for them. They chose to take that job, you know, and they have those benefits of getting legal defense and all that stuff. So they should really, you know, they should police themselves a little bit better. But, you know, obviously that's not going to change anytime soon.
So I'm still trying to get the order of events right. You filmed the beating, and then you came out with the footage to the media. Is that correct? You came out to the corporate media?
Yeah.
And then you subsequently got arrested for an old warrant that you had, correct? Just before going on TV. Now, how long were you in jail for?
6 months. 6 months. I got out January 4th, 2003. And when I got out, you know, I mean, my family was supportive. People were supportive around me. And but I still had no idea what was going on with the situation. I had found out that they had fired the officer from the Inglewood Police Department, and then the district attorney, because there was a lot of protests in the streets of Inglewood and throughout L.A., you know, demanding that the district attorney file charges against the officer for what he did was a crime. And so that didn't take place until about, it happened in July. They didn't press charges on him till about November of that same year. So I get out in January, and I'm expecting the trial to start, you know, in March or so. You know, I'm waiting to be asked to testify, because I'm a key witness. I mean, shoot, if it wasn't for my videotape, there would, you know, this would just be another he said, she said type of situation. And they ended up postponing the trial all the way to July, the end of July 2003. And I was present at that court hearing. There was all kinds of media from all over the world. It was a big circus. Everybody anticipated, you know, a riot getting started in Los Angeles, and, you know, people retaliating like they did over the Rodney King video. Basically, the jury came back 7 guilty, 5 not guilty. One of the jurors that I spoke to that thought he was guilty said that there were people in the jury pool that said that, "I don't care what a police officer does, I'm never going to convict them. I don't care what it's about at all." So, you know, there's definitely a division between people, and who knows if they were paid off, the jurors, or whatever. But, I mean, there were 7 people that thought that he was guilty and that it was excessive force. So they declared a mistrial in the case, and then we held a press conference with the community leaders out there and demanding that the DA refile the charges. So he decided to refile the charges and try him again, and that was postponed till January this year. They put him on trial and basically did the same exact trial with the same... The only witnesses they ever called were the police. They didn't call any other witnesses. The lady that was screaming, they didn't call me. They didn't call the father of Donovan Jackson, which was in the back of that police car that he got slammed on. They never called any witnesses. They weren't serious. It was just, you know, them trying to, you know, appease the outraged public to deflate people's anger, you know. And, I mean, I also want to point out, too, that this traffic stop had started over a parked car at a gas station. They were driving a Ford Taurus, which I'm sure to many racist police is probably too nice of a car for a black person to drive. And they didn't even stop them. They were pumping gas at a gas station, and the cops swarmed up on the car. The boy was inside. He was 16 at the time. He was inside buying chips and paying for the gas. They noticed that the car was unregistered, so they arrested the father for having an unregistered car, which is kind of weird because everybody knows that's only a ticket. Then the son comes out of the store, and they start giving him orders, and he's like, "Well, what did I do? You know, what did I do?" He reaches his hand into his pockets, kind of like Diallo, and they just swarmed up on him and started dragging him by his gold chain around his neck, you know, all across the parking lot, and beating him with flashlights and batons in the ear and punching him in the face.
He was even handcuffed.
So, I mean, it was over
during part
an unregistered car.
And he was even handcuffed during part of this beating, right?
Yeah, he was handcuffed. I mean, they had got him handcuffed when I started videotaping. So when I videotaped, anything, any abuse from further on should not have happened, because that's illegal. You can't. you can't hurt somebody once they're in handcuffs.
And your video clearly shows what?
Clearly showed that he did. So, but it did come out in the trial. They said that while he was handcuffed and placed over the hood of that car, while he was all dazed and confused, that he grabbed the officer's testicles. So that warranted him getting punched in the face, which is absolutely like the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Anybody who's ever been in handcuffs and been on the hood of a police car knows that you could not possibly reach an officer's testicles, in that position. That's just absolutely ridiculous. But it created reasonable doubt. So basically the punch was never looked at. It basically came down to the slam on the police cars is basically what the whole trial was all about. And, you know, like I said, there were certain jurors that just believed that the cops can do no wrong just because they protect the status quo.
So were there riots in Los Angeles as a result
of the mistrial? No, it was totally peaceful. There wasn't a single thing that happened. There was no fires, no nothing at all. Everybody learned from that last situation in Los Angeles. They learned from the Rodney King thing, you know. I think that the black community down there took a lot of heat from the rest of, you know, the world about, you know, well, why burn your own houses down? You know, why burn your own communities down? It doesn't make any sense. And I mean, sometimes you have to raise up to, you know, bring attention to certain things. And I think that the Rodney King thing was successful in the fact that, you know, it showed that a certain community of people are being targeted by the police and being treated unfairly. And it's kind of hard to sit there and watch TV all the time and always see police footage, you know, from the dash cameras or from, you know, wherever, of black people getting beat up by white police officers. And, you know, it just seems kind of odd. You don't see this happening to white kids in the suburbs, you know. And it's like, oh, but there's no problem. There's no problem with police beating black people, even though we see it constantly in so many different situations, like Cincinnati and Cincinnati twice, and Diallo in New York, and the recent one in Louisiana. I mean, you never see white people getting beat the same way. But there's, you know, law enforcement refused to accept that there's a problem there. That basically, you know, officers are going after black people in particular and violating their rights in particular, kind of like the Ku Klux Klan. And that's kind of my vision of what police officers, I know that they're sworn to protect and they do a service to us, you know, hey, if my house gets robbed, you know, I mean, I'm certainly going to want to call them for their help. But I think of police in mainly as, you know, modern day KKK, inflicting their way upon people that, you know, that don't see eye to eye with their political philosophies or religious beliefs or whatever. You know, they're basically enforcers of not just the law, but of their, you know, their race, of their power hold, of all those things. It's disturbing, you know, the whole thing about police and how it's become this like, where they're basically regarded by most people as terrorists. I mean, you know, I had an officer tell me recently that, like, oh, cops take, you know, they take so much heat from people, you know, people get mouthy with them and they have to deal with a lot of crap, and, you know, you try scraping bodies off the road and stuff and see how you're going to react and stuff. It's like, yeah, but, you know, 90% of the stuff that police do, they bring on themselves. And I don't have any, you know, sympathy for them when it comes to situations like, you know, people videotaping and them getting caught breaking the law. I have no sympathy for that. I mean, I know that they have to deal with a lot of crap and they have to see, you know, horrific things that I could never deal with, but that doesn't give them the right to just go across the board and violate everybody's rights. And, you know, it's kind of like where they believe that there's, you know, that they're not deterring crime at all, you know. So if they beat you up and they kick your ass, you know, while you're in a jail cell and mess with you as much as possible, that's going to deter you from doing crime. Or if there's a videotape that's broadcast worldwide, that it's going to deter other people from committing crimes. And that's not the case. Crime hasn't gone down. Cops don't realize that just the idea of going to jail itself is a deterrent to crime. It's hard as hell to go to jail. People don't like it. It's a horrible experience. Your entire life is being turned upside down. You lose your job. You lose everything. That should be enough. We don't need to, like, enforce more you know, force upon people just to get our points across. And, you know, I mean, that's how I come to, you know, to how I feel about police, because of all of those signs that are right there in front of me, is that they're basically just using their power to enforce their way, whether it be racism or political philosophy or whatever, you know, I mean, that's what they do.
Did Inglewood have any sort of police review committee?
No. No, unfortunately, they don't. A lot of cities in California don't have review boards. I know that they were going to pass a lot of legislation after this happened, but it all eventually just died. They were going to require that, you know, police officers have psychology tests. They were going to require that, you know, every 6 months, they were going to require that every police car in California have a dash cam. But unfortunately, California was broke, so they couldn't afford to put it in every single police car. But that was one of the things that came out of...
Hello? We lost Mitchell. I don't know what happened. It could be that my phone time ran out, or it could be that we just lost the connection somehow, but that really sucks. We're going to cut to a track here. This is Anti-Flag, Fuck Police Brutality. Right, we're back live with Mitchell Crooks. Mitchell, are you there again?
Yeah.
We're sorry about that, folks. We think that it was just a problem in the telecommunications industry. So
could be.
Yeah, could be.
It could be a lot of different things.
Yeah.
They pretty much try to silence me since this whole thing has happened, you know, so I wouldn't be surprised.
So how have they tried to silence you since this has happened? Well, they arrested you in front of BET.
Yeah, and since, you know, there's like, you know, the media's interest in, you know, my story and what happened to me, because this was like a big deal, you know, I mean, it wasn't like something that, it was just a news story that got swept under the rug. They made like this huge thing, like they say, you know, in the corporate media, you know, this story has legs, and once I got arrested, you know, I mean, it definitely had, you know, it was running, it was up and running, and, you know, I was such an integral part of it, you know, where the guy that videotaped the Rodney King beating, you know, he kind of took like a, you know, less of a stance against police and wasn't, you know, on TV as much, you know, and So, I mean, they've tried to intimidate me and try to keep me from, you know, speaking out on the issue and stuff like that. I've had to get involved with different organizations like the October 22nd Coalition and Cop Watch, independent media and stuff like that, just to be able to continue to get my voice out. So I appreciate you allowing me to do that. But, you know, pretty much, you know, that I've had weird things happen to me that just seem kind of out of the ordinary. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some, like, COINTEL type program, you know, where I'm being monitored and watched my every move. And, you know, it just seems kind of odd, you know, to continue to harass me and give me a hard time, you know, when basically I just did something for another citizen that, you know, I would expect anybody to do. And, you know, just a lot of weird things, you know, my computer and stuff like that, you know, tracing emails. And, you know, sometimes I don't get emails. People are like, well, I sent you one, you know, and it's like, you know, important type stuff, you know, in between lawyers and stuff, and they seem to have kind of a heads up on everything I do. So I wouldn't be surprised. I've definitely made an enemy with law enforcement, which is cool because I've never really liked law enforcement in the first place. So, but it's kind of a high price to pay, and, you know, I continue to pay it. And I, you know, moved out of California, and I live in Las Vegas now, and, you know, there's no difference between Los Angeles police and Sacramento police and Santa Cruz police and you know, San Francisco police and Las Vegas police. I mean, it's all just one big giant problem. And, you know, I mean, I was walking down the street about 2 weeks ago, and I was taking my dog for a walk, and this little girl was riding on her bicycle coming down the sidewalk, and I stepped out into the street, you know, just so that my dog wouldn't, like, scare the little girl. You know, she shouldn't have been riding her bike on the sidewalk in the first place, but I did the nice thing, and there were some police officers that were in the road right there, and they swerved their car around really fast. I'm sure that they recognized me and jumped out of their car and pulled their mace out and unbuttoned their gun like I was going to do something to them, and, you know, basically, like, sprayed mace towards my dog, you know, and everything. My dog's, like, so harmless. He's like a black lab puppy, you know. And, I mean, you know, they wrote me up and gave me a ticket for it, you know, and, you know, it just seems like...
A ticket for what?
You know, I can't win, you know. I can't, like, escape, you know, what law enforcement, you know, the shit that I've started with them, basically.
What did you get a ticket for?
You know, this is a perfect situation of that. What's that?
Sorry, what was your ticket for?
Standing in the roadway. In Las Vegas, of all places, right? You know, where people are walking up and down the strip and everything. I mean, it's a ridiculous charge. It's something I can totally beat. But, you know, I have to jump through the hoops for these cops, and they knew that. And, you know, I mean, it's a situation now where I have to post bail in order to plead guilty. And it's just a big old mess, you know. It's like, you know, I should have been told to get on my merry way, you know. I mean, they said that they... saw my dog showed signs of aggression towards the little girl, and, you know, I mean, they held me for 2 hours standing in front of their police car while they ran my name through, you know, all the warrant systems they have, and they didn't find nothing. My record's totally clean, and I mean, that just infuriated them 10 times more. I also had a pro-marijuana t-shirt on that really pissed them off, you know, saying that, you know, he can search me and arrest me for the t-shirt. I was like, whatever, you know, the First Amendment protects me on that, you know, you need to just, you know, let me leave, you know, and they just were not going to let me do it. So, you know, I mean, now I have to jump through hoops for these guys, and it's such a petty charge. I mean,
do you feel that
technically I never even stood in the roadway? I was in the gutter. So, I mean, it's just, you know, that's how I have to live my life now, is because I challenged the system, and, you know, now the system's turning its, you know, rearing its ugly head back at me, you know. And I mean, I don't even do anything wrong. I'm, like, scared to come out of my house most of the time, you know. I don't come out of my house without my dog. And, you know, and now my dog's getting me in trouble, you know. It just seems, you know, it just seems too good, you know. I know that they're in the neighborhood, and I know that they've seen me come out, because whenever there's police in my neighborhood, I jump out with my camera. I don't give a shit. I jump out there, and I want to make sure that they know that I have a camera and I'm watching what they're doing. And, you know, there's other kids in the neighborhood around here that have, you know, that have learned from me and, you know, seen me outside with the camera. And, you know, I've basically awakened them to, like, you know, hey, don't be intimidated by the police. You know, I mean, they hate cameras. They hate video cameras, especially when they're not installed in their cars, or they're not, you know, at the convenience store, you know. they hate citizen cameras is basically what I'm getting to. And, you know, you just got to be, you know, steadfast and, you know, continue to bring cameras to protests and events and monitor the every move of what police officers do, because, you know, the chances of you catching them slipping is high, I think. I mean, look at how many videotaped incidents happened right directly after I came out with mine. You know, there was the guy in Oklahoma that got beat silly, the big old black guy. That happened 2 weeks after my videotape came out. So there was the guy in Miami that, you know, was at the protest that got specifically targeted because he had a camera, where he got shot in the face and blood splattered everywhere. I mean, you know, so they obviously have a hatred towards cameras, and I think a camera is a hippie's best friend, you know. I mean, you can, you know, it's a non-violent weapon that you can use against police officers, and they hate that. I mean, there's no better way to get at a police officer than using a video camera and, you know, monitoring their every move. They don't like that because they don't like to have to follow the rules, you know. They like to be able to operate, you know, freely and do whatever they feel is necessary. So, you know, I would encourage people to, you know, go out and continue to film police officers and keep your cameras trained and keep them ready and keep them loaded and ready to go, because, I mean, your chances of catching something. And you can make a lot of money doing it. I made some money off of that videotape. I mean, it was showed worldwide. And, you know, I mean, that was a crash course in brain surgery, just trying to figure out how to deal with the corporate media and how, you know, greedy they can be. And, you know, I mean, at first I was selling my videotape for $150 to each individual local network. And then when it went national, you know, I upped the ante to, you know, $500. And, you know, and now, you know, I've got it up to about $1,000. I mean, and the guy that filmed the Rodney King video, he's made $1 million off of his videotape. So, you know, I mean, screw chasing thunderstorms and, you know, and lightning and stuff. Go after the police. You can make some money, you know. And it's definitely a profitable type thing. But, you know, at the same time, you got to be up for, you know, the things that are going to happen, you know, in the long run. I don't think that this police suppression thing is going to last too much longer. I truly believe that it has to do with the Bush administration and 9/11. And I don't think that, you know, it's going to last too long. Police are going to, like, start to reevaluate their mission and, you know, start to address some of the more serious issues and, you know, people, you know, bombing buildings and, you know, trying to prevent crime before it happens rather than trying to deter it, you know. I mean, you're probably going to start seeing, you know, the, you know, relaxing on drugs and stuff like that and making it more of a medical problem than a drug problem. I mean, I can only hope. I mean, that's, you know, what I shoot for, what I hope for, what I vote for. So, I mean, hopefully, you know, we'll see a change in police officers because, you know, it's funny how, like, you can be caught shoplifting at AMPM with a grainy, crappy surveillance video where you can't even tell who's who, and they'll convict you and throw you in prison for, you know, for a long time. But, you know, you have a crystal clear video showing an officer committing a, you know, committing a crime against the suspect, like my video did, and, you know, the officers are not penalized or thrown in jail for it. The only really good thing that comes out of it is that the officer was fired and that guy's going to be tied up in court for the rest of his life. I mean, there was like 8 or 9 different cases filed against him right after that videotape came out. So, I mean, he's going to be in court and he's going to be broke the rest of his life, and there's no way he'll ever be a police officer again. So that's one good thing that came out of it. You know, so you just have to kind of weigh those things and find out if it's something that you really, you know, feel strongly about. I mean, I know a lot of people have problems with police officers, and a lot of people are, you know, supportive of police officers. So, you know, I mean, when you're out at a protest, I think that they shouldn't be so oppressive towards us. That, you know, they use the excuse that they're worried about terrorism or they need to keep everybody safe, but really that's not what they're doing. They're, like, jumping in the middle of Black Bloc and, you know, sending out, you know, decoys and people, you know, to you know, try to stir up violence. And you just gotta keep a level head and, you know, realize that, you know, soon enough we'll get through all this crap that's going on right now.
Let's talk more about the harassment that you've experienced. Starting from when you filmed the video, you were harassed based on some old charges that you had done, right? Your old misdemeanor warrant charges. And then moving to Las Vegas, do you feel that that day that you were stopped with your dog after the girl, after the dog, what, barked at the girl?
He just kind of lunged at the girl. I mean, barked at the bike going by.
Do you feel?
I'd explain to the officers, you know, hey, you've never seen a dog, like, jump at a bike or a skateboard or something? He's like, no, I've never seen that. It's totally weird.
Do you feel
like
that
everybody
he's...
else is like, yeah, that's totally normal. Dogs do that, you know?
So do you feel that he stopped because you were Mitchell Crooks, the famous
videographer? Yeah, absolutely. So I think that they've been briefed or something that I was living in the area and to look out for me. You know, I don't leave the house very often. If I do, it's, you know, in a car or something. And I've had friends' cars, after they've left my house, be pulled over, unregistered tags, you know, for stupid things that were relevant to the Donovan situation. There was a report that I had done for a UK newspaper about how, you know, I had to get a dog just to protect myself. And, you know, I mean, they used that against me. So I think somebody's paying very close attention. I really think that it is. And, I mean, my family has received threatening letters. I mean, some of the emails I get are just absolutely amazing. Just carefully worded, like, you know, and then some are just grotesque, like, you know, I should chop your head off and you're a horrible, despicable communist. You should go to Iran or Iraq or something. And
are any of these signed by police?
What's that?
None of these emails are signed by police, are they?
Oh, no. It's, no, some of them are very careful. I mean, some of them, sometimes, especially like on independent media, you know, I would write, you know, and inform people about, you know, what's happening with the Donovan situation because there was no other, you know, medium to get that information out to people who, you know, were interested in, you know, the situation. And, you know, you'd get people come on there and they would talk in a way that you absolutely know that they're police, you know. You could just tell by the things that they would say that, you know, just mean spirited things that, you know, police, you know, have a certain way of talking, which we all know. And you could just tell, and that's how I know that it was police. I mean, I have no evidence to say. There's no way I can go to, like, the FBI and say, hey, look, you know, I'm getting these, like, threats, you know. I mean, my mom's getting letters, you know, up in Sacramento from people saying, you know, your son's horrible, you should have never gave birth to him, and he's a demon and a monster, and just horrible, horrible things. It's just disturbing, you know, I mean, that people would feel that passionate about trying to do something nice for somebody else, you know, that's stuck in a situation like Donovan Jackson was. I'd also like to point out, too, that Donovan was never charged with any crimes as well. So, I mean, he wasn't even charged with resisting arrest. He was charged with it, but they dropped the charges after the videotape came out. So,
have you spoken with
Donovan? Yeah, I mean, I've definitely been retaliated against. There's no doubt in my mind. And I mean, I don't have anything on paper until I got this ticket, you know, that proved otherwise. And to me, I mean, an officer had said to me, you're not in California anymore. And he had no evidence that I was ever from California. He had nothing at all. No, nothing. I didn't tell him my addresses or previous places or didn't have ID on me or nothing. There was nothing that he could have been warned that I was from California. Nothing. So, I mean, that was just proof to me that you know, I'm definitely being watched out here, and it's kind of unfortunate, and it's disturbing. I'm being, you know, I've had to sacrifice a lot of things that I've been used to doing, and I mean, I used to, you know, be a jungle DJ and spin beats, you know, every weekend, you know, at parties and raves and clubs and stuff. And, you know, I mean, I've kind of had to be on the down low and had some of my dreams, you know, crushed just because of that, you know. So I just don't want to put myself in predicaments where police, you know, are easy to get at me. So, I mean, in one aspect, I'm, you know, it worked. I'm not a criminal, but at the same time, it's like I shouldn't have to live my life this way, and nobody should ever have to live their lives that way just for taking a stand against something they believe in. You know, that's what this country is supposed to be about, you know. I mean, we're supposed to be able to take stands and you know, go out and speak our minds and do what we want to do and be free, you know, and that's just simply not the case.
There's an expression that hindsight is 20/20. So if you could change some of the things that have happened in regards to this situation with the police and your speaking out against the police, is there aspects that you wish to change?
Oh, I wish I could have got the entire footage of the entire beating. I think I would have been a lot more powerful. And I wouldn't change it. I have a lot of regrets as far as, you know, just not realizing the situation that I put myself in and what it would bring. But no, I wouldn't. I'd do it again. I do go out and film police still. I mean, you know, there's different organizations that have tried to, you know, get me to go along with them and follow police cars around, you know, and actually do ride-alongs with police officers to, like, videotape, you know, what they're doing. So, I mean, I don't regret doing it. I just regret the way that it's happened, you know. Had this had happened under the Clinton administration, there's no way I ever would have even seen a jail cell. You know, I would have been, you know, gotten the key to the city and, you know, a plaque, and they would have just said, forget about those charges. They're so petty, you know. But, you know, I mean, things have changed, and, you know, we've got a dictator in the White House now, and, you know, we've got all these lies and all this corruption across the board now, and everybody going me instead of we, you know. So I don't think anything would be any different, and, you know, I just think that we live in difficult times right now. So I think that is the only regret really that I have, is that it happened during the Bush administration. That's about it. No.
Have you talked to Donovan Jackson since this beating?
Yeah, I've spoken to him. I went over to his house after the first original trial, and I really didn't know what to expect, you know, because, I mean, originally I thought he was like 19 or 20-something, and, you know, he was 16 at the time when that happened, which makes it even worse. And but after, like, spending some time with him and his family, I was like, this kid is, like, he's not a thug. He's not a gangster. He's so respectful. He's very, very quiet, you know. Everybody has a friend like that where they know, or they're around, but they don't say a whole lot. And, I mean, he's, you know, he doesn't cuss. He doesn't listen to hip-hop, you know. I mean, he's a good kid, you know. I mean, he goes to church every Sunday. It's just kind of a weird situation, you know, and, I mean, he just didn't deserve to have that happen to him at all. But his family's very supportive of him, but they're really not involved much. They're just kind of like looking for the payday, you know, and it's kind of disturbing to me in a way that they wouldn't take the issue of police brutality a little bit more seriously and get themselves more involved is the way that I have. But I can understand, you know, they don't have the same problems that I have for sticking my head out and, you know, being vocal about it either, though. So, but yeah, he's a good kid.
So how do you feel that your case was portrayed by the mainstream media?
Well, they made me out to be a monster. I mean, the way that they swooped me up on camera like that and flew me to, you know, they made me look like I was Osama bin Laden or something, you know, like I was like the worst criminal like ever, you know. Oh, he's a drunk driver and drug taken, you know, whatever, you know. It just completely, you know, it took a lot of PR on my part to prove to friends and relatives and everybody else, you know, that, hey, like, I'm not that monster that they portrayed me out to be. And it, you know, it takes a little time, you know. I mean, and I don't really care what people think, tell you the truth. So, you know, if people want to look at me that way, it's not going to stop me, you know, from being who I am.
You eventually...
But, you know, they definitely portrayed me as, you know, this evil monster that, like, you know, that had all these horrible demons, you know, in his closet, and, you know, that I was homeless. I mean, that was the LA Times printed the headline the day after I got arrested. Their headline said, "Homeless Nader fan gets arrested." I was not homeless. I was pretty far from fucking homeless. I was like, I just went on a trip all the way around the United States, you know, DJing. I was doing pretty good. I was just staying in a hotel because I was having a hard time trying to find a loft downtown. So, you know, it's amazing how the media twists and bends things to fit their needs. You know, it's like when you watch the evening news, you know, sometimes you got to watch like all three of the different networks or four or five, whatever, just to get some sort of truth out of it. You know what I mean? Because everybody has their own little spin on every little thing that happens. And I mean, that was their little spin. That, oh, well, he's a homeless guy. Let's make it even worse. He, you know, he's a homeless guy. And I had mentioned that, you know, I told CBS I wasn't going to sell him a tape because they blew the election. So then they got this whole he's a big Nader fan thing. You know, he voted for Ralph Nader. He's horrible, you know, because, you know, you're not going to get a whole lot of sympathy from people for getting arrested when you're a homeless Nader fan. You know, people don't have much respect for homeless people or Nader voters, you know. So
now
I don't know how they came to that conclusion.
What happened when you went on the Montel Williams show specifically?
Well, that was kind of interesting, and it took a lot of guts for Montel to, you know, even bring me out, you know, and let me, you know, continue to tell a story about this, because it's just, you know, there's so many juicy parts of it. I went out, and they had brought out one of the jurors from the first trial. He basically, you know, went on TV and said that he didn't think that the prosecution against Jeremy Morris put forward a good case, and that there were jurors that, you know, ultimately thought that they were never gonna convict a cop. They didn't care what they did. And that was kind of cool because it really, like, defended me and backed me up in saying that, you know, hey, you know, this was a crime, and unfortunately there's just jackasses in the jury pool that feel like, you know, cops don't have to be held to the same standard that the rest of us do. And it took a lot of guts for, you know, Montel to, you know, tackle the issue, because it had been all but buried. So it was interesting. I mean, I was also on there with kid from Columbine that got shot and paralyzed. He was in Bowling for Columbine as well, the one in the wheelchair. And that was kind of interesting, you know, that Montel would take a chance. I mean, otherwise the show sucks, basically. But he did take a chance on the situation, and, you know, and he had said, you know, hey, I guarantee you that if there was a white kid, if that was a white kid getting slammed on a police car, there'd be an officer in jail right now. He's like, I defy anybody, you know, go ahead, write me. He's like, I know that's true. And it is. It's probably true, but we don't see white kids. Even though it happens, we don't see white kids on videotape, you know, getting slammed on police cars and punched in the face. Not that often, you know. And it's not often that the media takes it on. So it's, you know, it's like, you know, the most recent interviews that I've done have been not on corporate television. You know, they were like, you know, you're a criminal, goodbye, we'll see you later, you know. You know, you get no special treatment. I figured, hey, it's L.A., you know, who knows what could happen, you know, from this situation. I got some notoriety. I'm one of the greatest filmmakers ever to come out of L.A., if you think about it, because, you know, I wasn't supposed to film that, you know. I mean, you can film anything you want in L.A. but police brutality. And so it was kind of weird how, you know, the corporate media just kind of like said goodbye, you know, you're gone. But then the only other corporate media that did say, you know, come back, we want to hear your story, we want to learn about what's happening with this, is people like Montel and BET. That was it, the black community. Those were the only people that were still interested in the story, because they're the only ones that are still continuing to fight the struggle, you know, against police oppression and police racial profiling and everything else. It's very rarely that you even see stories on that. I mean, Dateline did a recent story this last Friday on racial profiling, but they bended it and twisted it in a way that was, you know, favorable to the police and to the media. So it's just very disturbing how much control and how much, you know, the media doesn't tell the truth. You know, how much they can twist and turn it to make it mean something that it really, you know, it's not true. It's like when we hear about things from Iraq, you know, and, you know, they're like, oh, no, but we're building schools and we restored the power, and, oh, but, you know, but people are dying, you know. Civilians and soldiers and people are dying, and, you know, but they don't cover that. They don't talk about that. They just twist it into, oh, well, you know, we've got the water running again, and, you know. I mean, it's just amazing how out of control the media and the whole system itself is just completely, like, just completely tilted in one direction. And that's basically, like, how I feel about, you know, the media's portrayal. I mean, I don't have any regrets as far as that. I mean, I don't really care. I'm a punk kid, so.
Do you have any more media spots coming up in the future, either through the corporate media or through the underground or alternative media?
No, I'm just kind of hoping to kind of like move on with the situation go back to doing what I was doing before, and you know, I'm getting involved here in Nevada with the Green Party and the marijuana initiative here to legalize. They're trying to, that's actually on the ballot to legalize an ounce of marijuana here and tightly control it and regulate it, nobody under 21. It was on the ballot last time, it got shot down, but they were saying that it was okay to have 3 ounces, and that's an awful lot, so I'm going to be working on that and getting involved in that until, you know, we see some change in this country and, you know, hopefully working with the Green Party or, you know, the Nader campaign out here. But in the end, you know, I still want to see somebody else besides Bush. I think that's what everybody's thinking, and I think that's what even Nader supporters and Green supporters and stuff like that, that's basically where they're at, is, you know, anybody but Bush. So that's where my focus is, and then hopefully, you know, we could start this whole DJ thing up, because I really think the art of the DJ is kind of taking a hit, you know, with the closure and crackdown on clubs and raves and stuff like that, that, you know, there's a whole industry that's basically been destroyed, and they wonder why the economy's not bad, you know. It's like, hey, you know, there's a whole genre of music out there, and the art form of the DJ is really, like, taking the biggest hit. So I'm hoping to get back into that and continue to spin hopefully get the hell out of Nevada. I'm telling you, nobody wants to live here. It's a fun place to visit, but you don't want to live here.
If you can make it out to Santa Cruz, we would love to have you here. We have some turntables set up. You can bring down your music and do a whole show, do a whole set.
That'd be sweet. I definitely something I want to do. I definitely have such an admiration for Santa Cruz, the city, and the area, the whole Bay Area. I mean, it just seems like such a lovely place to live, and everybody seems to be very well organized there, and that's something that I really miss, being out here, you know, and in Nevada, where, you know, you have Bush come out, and there's like, you know, 75 protesters, you know, where it is, you know, Bush goes anywhere in California, you know, there's thousands upon thousands of protesters. So I really have to applaud the, you know, city of Santa Cruz and you know, the whole Bay Area and Southern California for, you know, I mean, just sticking up against those powers that be and continuing the fight and, you know, not being intimidated, because that's really the only thing that they've got going for them is intimidation and scare tactics. So, you know, I definitely would be interested in doing something like that. Hopefully soon.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Mitchell.
All right. Thank you for allowing me to speak on the issue.
All right. Keep up the great work.
All right. Thanks.
Take care.